For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for wrapping up your week with us. This is your Friday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That is the account where we post all of our new podcasts, articles, news and notes, draft guide updates, every bit of baseball content. EthosFantasyBB is the place to follow. Guys, if you've not checked out our draft guide yet, it is phenomenal. The content that the guys have been putting in there on a pretty much daily basis is just blowing me away. I'm so proud of all the work we've done. And last night we added the piece de resistance of the draft guide. That is the draft tracker. It is powered by the ATC projections. You guys have heard me mention ATC projections for a long time. Ariel Cohen, who created them, has been on this show before and talked about it. And you can find out a lot of information about what goes into ATC if you just Google it. But essentially, it is an aggregate of all the major projection systems. The Bat, the Bat X, Steamers, Zips, all the major systems that you see on Fangraphs, ATC is an aggregate. We have used these projections that Ariel has developed as the powering tool of our draft tracker. So you can see from the screen grabs that I've put up on Twitter today, and you can check it out on our website as well, you will draft your team just as you normally would, and you have to input the picks as you go along. Acuna, Witt, Julio, Strider, Mookie, whatever it is. And it will tell you, with a color coding scheme, how your team looks compared to the other teams in the league. The dark red is obviously, you're lacking in that category. Dark green is, you're doing very well in that category. Comparing you in real time, as every pick is being made, to the other teams in your league. Now, it's never going to be perfect because the team that you draft is not the team that you're going to have at the end of the season. There are going to be changes, but it gives you a great idea of where you stand on draft day. This is something I've been using over the last few weeks in a lot of different mock drafts just to see if the technology does work properly. It works beautifully. That's why we were supposed to release it on Tuesday. We took a couple days just to make sure everything was working perfectly in it, and that is why it is now live on the site. So check out everything in the draft guide. I think, honestly, for $6, it is the biggest deal you're going to find this fantasy draft season. All the rankings, all the articles, all the tools, all for $6. It's a pretty ridiculous deal. Next year, it'll probably be more than $6, but if you lock in that price, it does get grandfathered in for life. So make sure you're checking out the link in the description and all we have to offer with the draft guide. It's really, really phenomenal stuff. Everything but the draft tracker, I think, really is the crowning achievement of everything we've been doing this offseason. Like I mentioned yesterday, we are going to be going through the last couple days of spring training notes. These go out for my followers over on Twitter and anybody else, of course. And then we kind of take them here on the pod every few days and just break down what we're seeing in a little more depth than the Twitter character limit will allow me to get into. So we're going to start off with yesterday's games. We went through Monday through Wednesday spring training games a couple days ago on the pod if you're interested in the recap from those ones. But let's start with Thursday and Christian Javier. So Christian Javier had some pretty mixed results, but overall it was a positive outing. Three innings pitched, he allowed three hits and a couple of earned runs. Those were both homers. He walked one batter, but he struck out six, and he had a 39% CSW. So it's a fairly strong appearance, right? The homers you don't love, but the strikeouts are good. The CSW is really, really good. After what happened to Javier last season, he is definitely a scary player to draft this year. The floor completely fell out from under him. He was dominant in the first half of the season, dominant. And then there was a point where he was literally a drop in any format, unstartable in 10-teamers, 15-teamers, 20-teamers. He was awful, awful, awful down the stretch. He comes with a lot of risk, but we're still looking at a fairly strong overall track record in a very good organization. If you believe in him at all, if you have any kind of hope that Javier can bounce back, his ADP is 164. That's a pretty sweet price. It's not too expensive to the point where you're thinking, well, this is really going to burn me if he doesn't pan out. 164, you're talking about like the 11th round of a 15-team draft. It's not like a top five round pick, top three rounds, where if those guys do, you know, miss, then you are kind of screwed. But it looks like at this point the price is not going to be jumping up to the point where I wouldn't be interested in Javier. Now, he's not somebody that's like a massive target of mine, but I think as like your SP4, maybe in the right build, an SP5, there's really mitigated risk at that point. You're not really talking about somebody who is likely to burn you, even if he doesn't get back to old Christian Javier form. So I don't mind him at all in that range, as long as he's not like your second starting pitcher. If you're punting SPs and you're not taking one until round 8 and round 9, round 10, I don't love that strategy. If Javier is anything more than like your SP4, I think you're probably asking for a little bit of trouble, but I think where he's being drafted does make sense to me. Let's talk about Aaron Nola. He got knocked around for the second straight outing, but he was striking out batters at least. 3 2/3, 6 hits, 3 earned runs, and 5 Ks. The last time out against the Marlins, he did not muster a single strikeout. So it's definitely a positive to see him with the 5 strikeouts. 6 hits, 3 earned runs is not great. I think he's pretty safe from a workload standpoint, right? I mean, Aaron Nola's likely to throw 180 to 200 innings, about as likely as any pitcher in baseball at this point. But that could very easily be an ERA over 4 over those 200 innings, and at that point, it's actually hurting you. He's going in a range, generally speaking, where he is still your SP1. There might be some builds you take an early Strider, you take an early Castillo, and Nola ends up as your second starting pitcher. Most of the time, he's your number one SP. I think in a lot of cases, it's just too risky for me. If he's your number two, even maybe your number three if you go pitching heavy, I'd feel a lot better about that than having him as my SP1. There's a lot of worry. I'm not out on Aaron Nola necessarily, but he'd have to fall a round or two for me to draft him at this point. I think I have one Aaron Nola share. I've drafted him one time this year through my 10 drafts or so. He's not somebody that I have a ton of interest in, really. But I'm not out either. It's just a point where I want him to fall a little bit past ADP. If he's right at ADP, I don't think that's enough of a bargain at this point. Let's talk Bryce Elder. He looked dominant. I don't think I've ever said those words before here on the show, but Bryce Elder looked dominant. 3 1/3, 2 hits, 1 earned run. He struck out 6 and walked 2. He had 13 swings and misses yesterday. It was the most of any pitcher. Well, let's pump the brakes a little bit. He had a 17.4% strikeout rate in 2023. He had the fourth worst qualified strikeout rate, and his Sierra at 4.81 was fifth worst. It's a terrible combination. He was very, very lucky last year in the first half, and we saw it down the stretch how far things really fell off for him. The team context is outstanding. They're not exactly flush with starting pitchers, so he's likely to be in the rotation for the long haul, but I think he's a pretty bad investment for fantasy baseball purposes, right? Outside of maybe you're going to luck into double-digit wins, there's a chance that's a high fours, even a low five ERA. Strikeouts are not going to be there on a per-start basis. I think Bryce Elder is a pretty clear and easy avoid for me at this point. Griffin Canning, he had some bad control issues yesterday. He walked 4 batters over 2 2/3. He also struck out 4, allowed 2 hits and 1 earned run. His command was not an issue last season, but it was occasionally problematic in the minors. It's not a big concern for me. Let's be watching him pretty closely next time out, because 4 walks, if it's 4 walks again or 3 walks, that's kind of a concern at that point. Again, it wouldn't put me out, but you know, in spring training, I talked about this on an episode about a month ago, I guess. No, probably not even that long ago, probably 3 weeks ago. But the little things to look for, right? One of them is a lack of command, or strong command, but command in general is something that you really should be looking for. 4 walks is pretty rough, but it's not something that I'm going to be overly worried about as of right now. Brian Wu had a nice bounce back after he had a pretty brutal spring training debut. He was 2 2/3, did not allow a hit or a run. He struck out 3 and walked 1 batter. He's, I think, pretty safely we can put the industry darling label on Brian Wu. A lot of smart people are pushing him up rankings, and it's easy to see why. The talent looks there. The organization, I'm leaning a lot more into organizations. I've always been that way. If a team has a good track record of developing pitchers or players in general, you're going to be a little more confident there. But Seattle's looked really, really good in that regard the last couple years, in and of himself. Even if he pitched for a bad organization, there's a lot to really like about Wu. He's climbing up industry rankings, and he is slowly creeping his way up mine as well. A lot to really like there. Let's talk about Dylan Cease.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was actually pretty happy yesterday. And it's not something that I was really expecting, but he's pulling us back in. Three innings pitched, two hits, one earned run, and five strikeouts. The big number, zero walks. He's only walked one batter over his five spring training innings. I know it's a small sample size. It's all we have to go for right now. If it was a bigger sample size, we'd talk about it, right? But I, this is the thing. People will get mad sometimes on Twitter and say, why are we even talking about this? It's only three innings. It's only four innings. It's only 20 at-bats. Are we supposed to ignore it altogether? Like, I don't even know what some people want sometimes. You see, why are we debating spring training numbers? Okay, I guess we could ignore it if that would make you happier, but I think we should at least talk about it. If it's positives, if it's negatives, we're highlighting it all here. It's a small sample size, and that's something that you got to point out. You can't just say Dylan Cease no longer has a problem with command. He absolutely does, but we're seeing some signs in the right direction here at the early outs, or at the onset of spring training. We've seen some positive signs from Dylan Cease, so I'm not going to read too much into it, but it's something to just put down in the notepad. Dylan Cease, command has looked better so far in spring training. I don't mind him because in certain draft rooms, and again, a lot of it is team build. A lot of every single player is team build, but if you're really lacking strikeouts early on, Dylan Cease is kind of the last guy in a given draft room who is capable of giving you 200-plus strikeouts. Not to say that he will for sure, but it's in all likelihood, if Dylan Cease is healthy, you're getting 200 Ks. That may come with a 4.1 ERA and a 1.4 whip. It's potential. But I think in the right build, if you really desperately need strikeouts, Dylan Cease, I don't think it's going to be as bad as last year. Like, maybe it's a 4-ish ERA, but if it's a 4 ERA, the whip is maybe average and you're getting 200 strikeouts, I think you can live with that in a lot of cases. It might not fit every single build. If you took Strider and you took Zach Wheeler in the first couple rounds, then you probably don't need Dylan Cease. But if you took Logan Webb and Max Fried, then I don't think it hurts you. I think it's a pretty reasonable pick depending on your team build. Let's move on to Friday, and we'll talk Louis Varland. He's been a popular topic here on the show these last few weeks. Third consecutive solid outing to open spring training. That's what happens when we record on Friday. But he went three innings, two hits, no earned runs. He struck out one batter and a 24% CSW. There's nothing really to write home about, but he's maintaining his velo, keeping his spin rates normal. And I think he'll start the season as a starting pitcher. There was somebody in the comments who said, isn't Varland going to be sent down? I haven't heard that personally. I think he is probably going to start the season as the number five starter. Could be wrong there, but I think even if he doesn't have that spot from opening day, you're still looking at easily 20, 25 starts from Louis Varland. I don't have a problem with drafting him, especially because his price is still so cheap. His ADP in March is 294. In a 12-team league, if you're playing on Yahoo or whatever, that's like the last round, last two rounds potentially. It's plenty cheap enough that you can take a chance on him. I think it'll likely pay off. It's not nothing is guaranteed, but I like what I've seen so far from him, and if he has that role, it's just gravy at that point. Chris Bassitt, he threw eight different pitches. This guy has a massive, massive arsenal. He threw all of them, and each one had a reduced velocity and spin rate compared to 2023. Now, he had a pretty decent line. It was four innings, four hits, one earned run. He struck out four, did not walk a batter, and had a 28% CSW. The line was solid. I'm not overly concerned, but let's just keep an eye on him and see if that velo does stay down. It was not significant, but like a mile, 2 miles an hour generally on each pitch. It's something. It's something, again, we're not changing any rankings because of it or anything like that, but I am going to be keeping an eye on Bassitt's next time out and just see what that looks like. Marcus Stroman, he bounced back pretty well in his last two starts after his poor string debut. Today we're looking at four innings, no hits, no earned runs. He struck out two, had one walk, and a 30% CSW. He also had reduced velo and spin, particularly on his off-speed offerings. I think he's fine as a late-round starting pitcher, but I don't really have a ton of interest in Marcus Stroman. It's a tough division. Yes, he's a ground ball pitcher, but it's not a great ballpark to be pitching in regardless. I think that he's been kind of a guy for his career who's been fairly lucky. If you look at his ERAs versus the ERA estimators, they're generally quite a bit lower than where they should be. So he's not somebody that I want to have a lot of stake in. I don't want to have Marcus Stroman shares all over 60% Marcus Stroman or whatever. If you have one or two, I have one or two Marcus Stroman shares late in drafts. It's fine, but I don't have a ton of interest there either. Ranger Suarez had a really, really, really nice start. Two consecutive to open up his year. Three and a third, two hits, no earned runs, struck out five, no walks, and a 34% CSW. Most of the last three seasons now, Ranger Suarez has been pretty consistent. I've clicked his name a few times. as my SP6, SP7, the last starter in your, you know, in an NFBC style league where you have to have 9 pitchers on the starting lineup, he's generally been like the guy I'm using to fill in one of those last 2 spots. I think he's a really nice value. I don't think that he's somebody that's going to, you know, explode and have a sub-3 ERA or something, but I think he's, you know, good enough pitcher and a good pitcher for a good team, so wins are going to be there. Like, I think the 3.8, 3.9 type of ERA, nothing crazy, but just enough that he can be on your roster the whole year and not really bother you, especially in a 15-team league. You're never really, outside of some extreme examples, going to be that worried about starting him against anybody. The Dodgers, the Braves, in Coors, things like that are always going to apply, but I think we're pretty okay here with Ranger Suarez as kind of a late-round draft pick. I don't have any problem with it at all. DL Hall had a solid enough appearance here. Wasn't amazing, but it was fine. 2 innings, he allowed 5 hits and 2 earned runs, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk, and a 31% CSW. He's going to at least start the season in the rotation for the Brewers. They don't really have much of a choice right now with all the injuries they've had. They don't have Burns. They don't have Woodruff anymore. Miley's been hurt. It's just a disaster. It's mostly been about his command, and that's been all right so far. I don't mind using a late-round draft pick on DL Hall to see if it sticks. Again, with all these late-round guys, if they don't stick, there's plenty on the waiver wire, especially because most of you guys listening are likely in a 10 or a 12-team league. There's plenty that you can find if these guys don't work out, but DL Hall projections look really good. Still some pretty decent pedigree. It's just about the command. If the command is looking all right, then I'm going to be pretty interested in him. Shota Imanaga had some difficulties finding the strike zone today. 3 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, struck out 5, but he did have 2 walks and a 26% CSW. Only 56% of his pitches were thrown for strikes. It's been a couple of less than ideal starts for sure, but he has 10 strikeouts and 5 1/3 innings pitched, and that's what really matters here. If people are going to be pushing down Imanaga because of it, then I think you should probably be buying the dip. I don't think that, again, we never really know what these guys are going to look like over a full season. Essentially a rookie. But I think that it's probably, you know, his price is probably reasonable enough where you can take a chance. Again, he's not somebody that I want to have on every team because that's where it could kind of blow up for you. But I think in a lot of cases, I'm pretty happy taking Imanaga where he's going, especially if people start to just look at the surface numbers here. A couple earned runs, a couple walks, and push him down. I'm looking at that strikeout number, and I think that's what we really need to be taking away from Shota Imanaga. Let's wrap it up with Tanner Bibee. He struggled with his command a bit so far. 3 innings pitched, he had 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. He did have a 41% CSW, which is incredible. I believe it was the highest number of the day. That's gorgeous, and we can focus more in on that. He has struggled a bit with his walk rate in the past, specifically in the minors. There were some times where it was a little bit higher than you would have wanted to see. So, again, no real need to panic or move Bibee or really anybody down. But just, again, something to keep an eye on. And people will make fun of that when you see it on Twitter. People will make fun of monitor, keep an eye on, those kind of phrases. I don't really understand it, to be honest. If a guy is down in velo, even if it's his first start of the spring, keep an eye on what it looks like next time out. There's no harm in that. If people want to make fun of you for it or whatever, then by all means. And it, you know, people will diminish the impact of it. Well, it's his first start. Of course he's a little bit down. Well, what about the guys who are a little bit up right now? How do you classify them? Or the guys that are neutral? Like, there's analysis that you can give about every player, even if it's not going to be like, yep, this guy is the number one player in fantasy now. Acuña, step out of the way. You know, James Woods hit 4 home runs in spring. So, like, we're not doing that, obviously. We're just looking to see if there's little tiny bits of information that we can use to our advantage. And that's what I try and do every day with my quick hit notes. So make sure you guys are following along over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. For all draft guide updates, Ethos Fantasy BB, and then sportsethos.com. Get everything there right from the source. We are going to be having a fun week of guests next week. We've got a couple locked in. Monday and Tuesday shows are locked in. We're doing position previews. Monday, I'll be joined by Daniel Rotter, who is one of the writers here at Sports Ethos. He did the sleepers and bust pieces in our draft guide. Formerly writer for Friends with Fantasy Benefits, worked for Justin Mason as well. And then on Tuesday, Derek Van Riper from The Athletic is going to be joining us, and we are going to be doing a third base preview. Still locking in some other guests that we're going to have next week. Greg Jewett's going to appear on the show at some point. Gray Albright from Razzball is going to be here. Ben Tidd, also from Sports Ethos, is going to join us. We have a lot of people that are going to be stopping by over the next few weeks to get us ready for the season. But that'll do it, guys. Hit us up on socials, subscribe, download, rate, and review. Do all that fun stuff. Have a great weekend, and we will see you on Monday.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.